Tuesday morning. I hope you had a great long weekend, and it's back to work, back to school. Maybe not back to work if you're in the field seeding. I know there's lots of seeding to be done in the province, but if you look at the radar map, yeah, a lot of the province getting moisture today. So might be a day where you're not able to do the work in the field today. Give you a chance to prep, do a few other things. There's never a shortage of things to do on the farm, but if you're not able to be in the field, might be at a standstill for a day or two. And I know most farmers will say, you know what, it's welcome. We'll take the moisture anytime we can get it. Some are saying crops not only are seeded, but they're up. Just with a little bit of heat and the moisture that we've had so far, we're starting to see, I noticed, wheat crop as I was driving out east of the city here this past weekend. You can see it already coming up through the ground. Okay. Here's a topic of conversation. We've actually got to come at this a couple of different ways because pets are a topic that affect many people. Many people have pets. We're going to talk pet safety as part of this segment. And I've got Dr. Kathy Dick joining us to do that part of the talk. Kathy is a wellness veterinarian and a clinical instructor at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Great to have you here. We're going to get you to hang on for a second because I'm going to start the conversation with Dr. Colleen Dell. Dr. Dell is from the University of Saskatchewan, Research Chair in One Health and Wellness and Animal Therapy Researcher. Dr. Dell, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So a lot of the work that you are doing, Dr. Dell, is around pets and landlords. So it's this issue of whether or not tenants who have pets are welcomed into renting certain homes, certain apartments. Where did this become a topic that needed research, that needed you and the team to dig into it?
Right. Yeah, this is definitely one of the areas we've been working on with the community and in particular with the Saskatchewan SPCA and then other organizations as well. I don't know if people are aware that a large number of the animals that go to, say, the Saskatoon SPCA or the Regina SPCA or any other shelters that we have in rescues are there because of affordability and the housing crisis, right? And then that people may have to move because of rentals, right? So they're going to move or for whatever reason, and they're not allowed to take their pet with them into the new rental. And so these animals then are relinquished, and that is not a great thing for the animal. That obviously is not a great thing for the mental health of the individual as well, who's having to relinquish their pet because they're not allowed into their new, in the place they're able to find or afford for their rent.
I was reading an article on the weekend about that very issue, people that are forced to move because of one part of the housing crisis or another and not able to take their pets. Do you have an idea of how big this problem is nationwide and in Saskatchewan? Is it proportionally one side or the other of it?
Yeah, we recently did a legislative review and a policy review of tenants' rights to pets in Canada, and this was led by Adrian Tessier from the Law College on our team. And what we found that there were eight jurisdictions, or there are eight jurisdictions in Canada where there's no legislation at all regulating the rights of tenants to have pets. And so it's entirely up to the landlord in that case of whether they would permit a tenant to have a pet on their property. So, for example, in Saskatchewan, we were silent around legislation on that as well. We're one of those eight. While we do have the residential tenancy legislation, that is silent. That's when, there's so many of these words. So, sorry, yeah. It's the Office of Residential Tenancies. They have explicitly ruled, though, that asking tenants to pay a pet deposit is a way of resolving, you know, potential conflicts or damage to property after the tenant has moved out. So we do have that in Saskatchewan. So it's legal to have a pet deposit. It's legal to have a no pet clause as well. And then the landlord has a refusal when applying, when a tenant or a potential tenant is applying to refuse if they have a pet. That said, we do have some very pet-friendly rental places within our province, and you're seeing that increasing. So that was part of our job, was to look at what's the landscape across Canada. So if I was doing kind of, say it was a report card, I kind of put Saskatchewan in the middle there. One of the problems comes with pet deposits and or you might call pet rent or what have you, is that can be, especially with the housing rental prices now, that can be out of people's means, and therefore they still have to relinquish their pet. Whereas if you look to Ontario, really different. They have the best protection of rights for renters right now. The no pet or having a no pet clause in their rental agreements is illegal. Whereas in Saskatchewan, we really don't have a standard rental form.
Right.
And also in Ontario, landlords can only evict tenants for reasons related to their animals in limited circumstances. So in Ontario, with their Residential Tenancy Act, once a pet is in, it cannot be evicted just because the landlord says, hey, I don't want that dog here anymore, what have you. And it has to be for really good reason. And there they do not have pet deposits. So it really is, you know, it's varied around the country. And one thing we're trying to make awareness around is because we do have a national strategy on housing, and that's coming up for renewal this year at the national level. But really, housing is a provincial responsibility, mm-hmm. right? So for us, is raising awareness around this, because a lot of people don't know. But we also know from our research and others that having a tenant with a pet can lead to lots of positive benefits for the landlord as well, because tenants seem to stay longer. People are having pets now. They're delaying having children. Right. And we even did a national survey recently with the psychology department in our lab and Angus Reid, and it was 82% of Canadians who live with a dog consider their dog to be a family member. Mm-hmm. That number is massive, and was just around 81% said they could, that were living with a dog, so they can bond as strongly to a dog as they could to a person. So when you think about a person having to move and not able to take their family member, that has many ramifications, right? For, again, both the animal as well as the human, that I don't just think we're really thinking through. And so it's really great to have these conversations.
Right. We've had a couple of times, we've had animal rescues on the show from around mm-hmm. the province, and they've talked about the volume, the number of animals they have in their care is up. So yes. This, they didn't list this as an aggravating factor, but it's sounding, Dr. Dell, like we talk about this, that potentially this could be one way that it plays into it.
Oh, 100%. And our stats from the Saskatoon SPA will show you that. As a reason for relinquishing a pet, right? And again, like I said at the start, I think with the housing crisis that we have now and cost and affordability, which are skyrocketing in all parts of people's lives, that because we have the pet deposits and things like that, or a pet rent, that can be prohibitive for some people going into a new rental place if they're having to move.
Okay. Well, this has been a great chat to Dr. Colleen Dell. We appreciate you giving us some time today. Thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for your continued advocacy for pet owners and in terms of that relationship with landlord and tenants. And we know we'll continue to do that work.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
So that's Dr. Colleen Dell, University of Saskatchewan Research Chair in One Health and Wellness, and she's an animal therapy researcher. The other thing that I wanted to address and talk about was basically pet health, wellness, and safety, especially as we head into the summer. I mentioned Dr. Kathy Dick is joining us. She's a wellness veterinarian, clinical instructor at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. We'll take our break. We'll come back, and I want to talk with Dr. Dick about a number of things. It is tick season, so we worry about that. Of course, heat exhaustion, although not an issue over this past long weekend. You know, going into summer, it will be. And there is a virus out there that is causing great concern to pet owners. We'll talk about that and a bit more with Dr. Kathy Dick when we get back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Continuing on with our discussion about pets. Thanks again to Dr. Colleen Dell from the University of Saskatchewan, talking about it from the standpoint of pet-friendly rentals. So if you're moving into a new home, whether it be a house or an apartment, the importance of being able, having landlords give tenants the ability to bring their pets with them. That's why we're seeing a spike, because of the housing challenges out there, a spike in the number of animals that are surrendered to the Humane Society or different organizations' shelters across the province. The other side of the topic that I wanted to chat about as we head into summer, when it comes to pets, is where Dr. Kathy Dick comes in, a wellness veterinarian, clinical instructor at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. Let's start with ticks, Dr. Dick, because I mentioned we were out at the lake this weekend mowing grass, moving some dead trees that had fallen through the winter. I pulled three wood ticks that were crawling on my arm off of me. I've got a two-year-old mini Dachshund whose legs are about 2 inches long, so you can imagine him running through the long grass. We checked him for tips, didn't find any ticks, but how important is that in keeping your pets healthy heading into the summer?
Well, as you know, ticks pass on many diseases, such as Lyme disease being one of them. So, yes, it is important to check for them. And as you noted, you found them on you. Equally as important, you need to look on your dog. And if you find them on the dog, you should be looking on you as well. So, yes, they pass on diseases that are not very pleasant. So the way to prevent them, so where ticks like to hang out, they don't really care, you know, if you're a human being, a dog, a cat, whatever. They just want a mammal to, like, have a blood feed on. So particularly in areas where there's long grass and wooded areas, that's probably where you're going to find the ticks. And ticks are active anytime the temperature is over 4 degrees centigrade. So that could be anywhere from April to October. And if it's really warm fall, that can be even extended past then. So the first thing that you can do is absolutely is check for them and to remove them. It's important to remove them properly. So you're going to pull up on them. You want to get the head part out.
Right.
You don't want to leave that behind. And the next thing is then looking at tick preventative. So out there, there are some oral medications that you can give. They can be good from anywhere from a month to 3 months at a time. There's also some topical products out there as well. Some of the topical products you do have to be careful about because they are toxic to cats and toxic to fish. So if you have a dog that likes to go swimming, probably not a good option.
Right.
But so if you are, you know, going camping or hiking with your dog and you're really, or even if you're walking your dog like down by the river and they're running around in the grass or whatever, it's not a bad idea to have something like an oral tick preventative on board.
Other things as we head into the summer, things like heat exhaustion, being aware of that. What about even the smoke inhalation? You know, we think about, well, you and I go outside last year. Yeah. We had some smoky days. We have the ability to say we're going to pop back in the house. But for dogs that are outside for long periods or cats, is smoke a worry?
Absolutely it is. And much like for us, so smoke, it can affect the airways. It can produce damaging substances that we inhale, and we don't kind of get rid of them. And so it really depends on how, you know, bad the atmosphere is, how long you're going to be exposed to it. And if you, you know, if you're a dog or a cat, if you have underlying issues, let's say you have a heart condition, or let's say you're one of those little dogs that have a little pushed in nose, we call them brachycephalics, like the Frenchies,
yes,
the Bostons, they have even harder time, like with smoke inhalation. So, you know, much like when we get those weather advisories telling us not to be, you know, to stay indoors and to limit our exposure, we need to be paying attention to that for our pets. And birds in particular are very, very susceptible to anything that goes on with the air. So you need to be mindful of that as well.
Chatting today with Dr. Kathy Dick, a wellness veterinarian, clinical instructor at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. You know, I think about when we were at the lake on the weekend. Our dog, Mike, Big Mike, as I like to call him, because he's not, loves to run down. He's not a swimmer, but he likes to drink the water in the lake. Is that bad for him? I think about, especially as the summer wears on, sometimes there can be a lot more green algae in the lake.
Yes, and you do have to be really, really careful. So blue-green algae, which actually can be different colors. It can be blue-green or red-brown. It can look like kind of foamy or scummy. It might be kind of stinky. The problem is that there are some, I'm going to say, safe algae, and then there's the highly toxic algae. And just by looking at it, you can't tell. So if you see that, you need to keep your dog away from it. It can be fatal. quite quickly, and there's no antidote for it. So if the water looks kind of suspect and you wouldn't walk in it or want to swim in it, you probably need to not let your dog do either. And the other thing to be careful of as well is, even if you have bird feeders or standing water in your own backyard, you need to be emptying that and cleaning them regularly so that algae doesn't collect there.
We've only got about a minute, Dr. Dick, but yeah. Parvovirus, is this present in our province, and how can we prevent against that?
The biggest prevention you can do for parvovirus is get your animals vaccinated, especially puppies. Puppies need a full series starting at 8 to 9 weeks of age, spaced 3 to 4 weeks apart. They have to be at least 16 weeks old for the last vaccine. That is the most important thing you can do to protect your dog. It is everywhere in the environment. It survives our long winters. That's what you need.
And
to
where how do they get it, doctor?
So doing what dogs do, they dig in the dirt, they eat the grass, they eat the dirt, they lick things that you and I wouldn't even consider as a food source. It's called spread by the fecal-oral route. They swallow it. The virus gets into their body. It likes cells that rapidly divide, so it goes into the bone marrow. It affects the cells of the gastrointestinal tract. You'll get vomiting, lethargy, diarrhea, often bloody diarrhea. And then they, because it affects their bone marrow, it affects their ability to fight off infections. So they often get secondary infections as well.
Good stuff. Dr. Dick, I appreciate you giving us some time on the show. Thanks, and we'll check in with you again soon.
All right. It was my pleasure. Take care.
Dr. Kathy Dick, wellness veterinarian and clinical instructor at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.